You're in the information age, but facts are in short supply. Reject the noise, ask bold questions, and pursue the truth with FBI whistleblowers and founding suspendables Garrett O'Boyle and Steve Friend. This is the American Radicals Podcast.
It is the American Radicals Podcast, and welcome to it on a Thursday, April 18th, 2024. We are live streaming on Rumble, rumble.com/AmRadPod. If you're with us, make sure that you give us the thumbs up and follow the program. If you want to subscribe, that would be great too. If you listen to the podcast form and audio, make sure that you subscribe so that you get the automatic updates, which we drop when the American Radicals Podcast goes every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Thank you for joining us today. We have a jam-packed show. I don't think there's any chance in the world we're going to get all to all the content that I want to talk about. I warned Garrett before we came on, just caution, like I'm going to be dropping some monologues. I got a lot to say. I got a lot of problems with you people. We have to air some grievances. Not, of course, with the American Radicals podcast audience, but with our ruling regime, the ruling elite, which is why we're calling today's show Law and Disorder. And before we get to it, want to thank the show's sponsor so we can just go uninterrupted and let me ramble. And that, of course, is True Earth Pharmacy. TrueEarth.co is the website that everyone should go to. You go there, don't need to put the M in it. It's TrueEarth.co, and you can purchase any of their fertilizer products or their supplement products. And if you use the show's unique promo code, which is AMRAD24, you can get 10% off all of those items at checkout. So be sure to take advantage of that to support this show, support this company. They are American owned. They are very vertically integrated. They do everything within the great state of Georgia, no foreign involvement. So let's support small businesses and let's support the American Radicals podcast. AMRAD24 is the promo code. If you go to trueearth.co, and we appreciate anyone who wants to go there and do that. So let's get straight to it. Bring on Garrett. You can find him on social media at GOBActual. Great to see you this morning, Garrett. How are you on a Thursday?
Good morning, my friends. Oh, wait, that's Kyle's line. I am doing well. Glad to be here, always. I'm enjoying the new time slot. And thankfully, other than leaving early the other day, I've been able to be around for everything, as have you. So I like it. And yeah, looking forward to what you have in store for us today.
Well, I had a lot of things just popping into my head simultaneously. I put myself through pretty rigorous mornings. You know, I go for this really long run and I don't like running. I actually hate it quite a bit, but I find the entire experience to be very valuable because I think it's important to do hard things so that when it comes time to do hard things, you know, you can do them. And two, it's just clears my mind. I can think better. And then all of a sudden I got this moment where like a whole bunch of things dumped into my head and I said, I got to talk about this. Wanted to share this with you because I always like to get your perspective. The premise of what I want to talk about is something that I frequently do when I do public speaking events. And one of my issues that I have with the FBI is that the FBI and the DOJ will reinterpret the law. And we're seeing examples of that, not just from the FBI, but from other administrations and agencies within the government, which we will get to. But I want to talk about some of them because I don't think people are really aware of it. We give an inch and they take a mile every single time. Yep. And right now the Supreme Court is hearing about this obstruction of an official proceeding. This is worth a long form coverage of. We're not going to do that today, but the cliff notes of this, for those who don't know, is this charge is not pertaining to anything that actually happened on January 6th. It's a tax law. It spawned off of the Enron collapse in the early 2000s. And what wound up happening was the government decided that they wanted to go after Enron for their questionable accounting practices. Well, I don't want to weigh in on whether or not they're right or wrong, but that was what the mission was. But Enron was going to have a pretty strong defense because they could say, we hired Arthur Anderson, one of the top five accounting firms in the country. We took their advice. You can't blame me for taking the expert advice of my accountant. If they messed up, that's on them, not on me. So then the DOJ decided, well, we have to discredit Arthur Anderson. And that's how the stages went. So they wound up going after Arthur Anderson, collapsed them, and then Enron collapsed, and then on appeal, all of it actually was overturned. But at that point, the damage was done. Even though they were exonerated, all those futures were gone. Well, when it comes to the official obstruction of official proceeding law, what Arthur Anderson was actually doing was shredding documents, but they didn't know that there was an official proceeding going on. They were just doing it in accordance with their practices that they said, it's not our job as an accounting firm to make the government's job easier to prosecute. We have a policy that we shred your documents after a certain amount of time. That time has elapsed. We're shredding the document. Unless you give us a some sort of preservation request or a search warrant that's mandates by law, by order of a federal judge, that we have to preserve these documents, our policy is to shred them. And the government went after them for that. And then, in effect, passed this law, which has now been reinterpreted. I think the larger point to me is it is not your job to make the government's job easier. There's right. a reason if you, let's say you murder somebody and then hide the body, they don't charge you with obstruction of justice for hiding the body. It's not your job to make the government's job easier, even something as brutal and awful as that.
Right. Do you know what year this was roughly, this Arthur Anderson thing?
This was when I was in college in the early 2000s, okay. because the Sarbanes-Oxley law, man, I was an accounting major and they were like, this, the age of the auditor is upon us. You're going to enjoy being an auditor when you graduate here. You're going to go out into the world. You're going to, they basically kind of like an army recruiter. You're going to see the world. Like it'll be the inside of the Hilton Hotel, but you're going to travel around.
That's better than a mountainside in Afghanistan. But a couple things come to mind for me right off the bat here. One, it ties directly into what we were talking about the last two Saturdays, not the First Amendment per se, but constitutional law 101. The burden of proof is on the government. And so now, oh man, dude, this, you're right, Steve. I'm already getting fired up over this. The burden of proof is on the government. And remember, people, this is two guys who spent their whole adult life just about in law enforcement until, you know, relatively recently. So we're not anti-law enforcement. We're not anti-American government. Well, maybe at this point, in a lot of ways, we are, because they have gone so far beyond the pale to what was established when this country was created. The burden of proof is on them. So shredding these documents as a course of their practice, not knowing that there was an official proceeding going on, and then the government weaponizing again, and remember now, we're talking 20 years ago, weaponizing itself again, and saying, oh no, you're making our job too difficult. Yeah, that's the whole point of America, is so that the job of the government is difficult, because freedom is more important. But instead, we have tyranny now. And I know people say, well, that's kind of strong. No, this is tyranny. This is how it starts. It started decades ago, and it's getting worse and worse and worse every year. And then the other thing that comes to mind for me is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And they never do. They never actually do.
They actually use the laws and reinterpret them in a way that's more advantageous, or they purposely don't fulfill their charges that we do give them in the hopes that we give them more power. It's like this top down, bottom up strategy that we're seeing, which is the first thing I wanted to actually get to sort of close the loop on the 702 discussion that we had, and you had to jet out before we gave you really opportunity to respond to it. I think the debate and the information has been presented. Briefly, though, I don't want to neglect the opportunity to just explain it as quickly as I can. Section 702 of FISA allows the federal government to monitor a foreign official when they are in a foreign land, their phone calls, their emails, that sort of thing. But it's only useful when it's misused by the FBI. And the information that is gathered frequently will inadvertently collect on an American citizen. Now, you're not supposed to be able to look at that, but they do. It's free. You just type in their name and you can look at it. Kyle Serafin, our mutual friend, said that he did that for years on end, thinking that that was normal. But it's violation of the law. You're not supposed to do it. And they tried to pass an amendment when they reauthorized now for 2 years, this FISA Section 702, this warrant amendment that said, if the information on American is gathered, you need a warrant in order to look at it. And I think that there was a actual fundamental misunderstanding of what was meant by that. It's not a warrant to look at it because they're communicating with a foreign official. You already have to have reasonable suspicion that a crime has been committed and this person has committed a crime in order to use that information. It's supposed to be something completely unrelated. That Section 702, the information and the communications that you've gathered is not evidence of a crime at that point, because you're not supposed to know it. You have to already have them as a subject of an investigation of a crime, which is why even that amendment, I thought in principle, I should theoretically be opposed to, because we are basing it on the premise that the person's done something wrong just by being collected. And that is the fundamental misunderstanding that we have of Section 702. Now, what I wanted to talk to you about today was the actual reauthorization bill. I had the tremendous misfortune, because I'm a complete nerd, of reading through the reauthorization bill. And
somebody's got to do it, Steve.
Someone has to do it. Read the bill.
You know the politicians aren't. You know they aren't reading it.
And I came across something that I found rather alarming, not because on its face, if you read it, you just think, oh, well, yeah, that makes sense. But with the government that we have now that reinterprets the law, this could be weaponized against people like you and me. So let me pull up the actual law.
Why wouldn't it?
Exactly. So let me pull up the actual bill, the language that I'm concerned about. And this pertains to penalties and unauthorized disclosure. And I will just read it. The offense: a person is guilty of an offense under this section if that person knowingly and willfully communicates, furnishes, transmits, or otherwise makes available to an unauthorized person, or publishes, or uses in any manner prejudicial to the safety or interest of the United States, or for the benefit of any foreign government, to the detriment of the United States, any classified information that contains the contents of any communication acquired under this title to which a known United States person is a party. All right, that's very lawyerly and legal ease.
Because they don't want people to understand what it says.
No, they don't. And I think if you just at first glance look at it and say, okay, if the United States is collecting on an American, it is illegal for someone who works for the government to take that classified material and reveal it. It's got to be protected. Well, that's good, right? Well, if you're not nefarious, but we know that we have proof of concept that our government is. And if I read that, immediately I think, well, if Garrett is working for the FBI and sees that the FBI is collecting on an American improperly, accessing that information like they're not supposed to be doing, and says, hey, you know what, boy howdy, I'm going to go and turn this over to some reporting authorities. I don't know, say people in Congress, because you know, I'm a whistleblower now. Well, they don't have a clearance, Garrett. They don't know. And that's against the interests and safety of the United States government. So you, according to them, I'm sure, by the letter of the law, and then the spirit of the law, by the spirit of the law, you're definitely not. But by the letter of the law, they will argue that you're actually violative of it. In fact, Stacey Plaskett said you are working for a foreign government, right? Yeah. You're a Russia stooge.
Right.
And because you're perpetuating that Russia narrative, you're actually doing this to the benefit of Russia.
Yeah.
We're going to charge you with violating this FISA reauthorization now and refer you over to DOJ.
And just be weaponized against you more. And think of this too, like you said about Plaskett, our dear friend. So even the FBI hasn't accused any of us of doing anything with classified material, but she's going to throw that out there. And as the weaponized government works, then the FBI or DOJ could be like, oh, there was an allegation made. Because remember, at least in my case, this all stemmed from a phony allegation anyways. So why not grab another phony allegation and say, oh, now we can predicate him because somebody made the claim. Oh, and it's actually a sitting member of Congress, even though she's, what do we call her?
A non-voting. She's from the Virgin Islands, even though she lives in New York.
Uh-huh. Oh, man, even that. That's a whole rabbit hole, too. But, hey, just keep voting these people in, folks. If you took all the laws that America had and stacked them up, like printed them off and stacked them up, and I don't know how anybody could look at that and say, oh, yeah, the government's not weaponized. And then this right here, this little piece of 702, it reminds me of how we often say how we are like ACLU lawyers from the 90s, because they have a whole section on their website about how and why. Look at that.
You mean this section? Because this. The mind meld is complete, Garrett.
Look at this. Oh, my goodness. We couldn't have planned it better. And again, folks, we don't.
So for those who are just listening, I am pulling up the ACLU's website that says warrantless surveillance under Section 702 of FISA, which is pretty against 702 at the time of this writing. They may have changed their perspective now that they are full on in for the leftist agenda. But this talks about the first thing, what's wrong with Section 702. And it's not short on content. There's 9 particular sections that the ACLU lists that are areas of concern for it. We don't have to be hype people for the ACLU, Garrett, but there was one more point that I wanted to get your perspective on that I was thinking of, about particularly when the federal government is neglecting the charges that we and powers we actually give it. and used in doing that in a fashion and a strategy to get more powers that they actually want. They don't want the powers we give them, right? I mean, they'll take them because who's not going to take extra powers, but we really want the other thing. So you think about Section 702, they are saying and articulating, the FBI director, the attorney general, members of Congress have said, we need this tool to stop the flood of fentanyl and the illegal immigration at the southern border. It's not a tool for that at all, okay?
But we can use it for that.
And they've admitted that they do use it for that. And because we have a flood of fentanyl and illegal aliens at the southern border, I guess it's not really effective actually at allowing that to happen. Yeah, so
it's actually worse than ever. Thanks a lot, President Biden and all the lackeys in government who just like, okay, think of what you're saying right now compared to what's happening in real life. And then what the politicians are saying. It's, oh, dude.
We give you the power to police the border. The expectation that you will.
Yeah.
We give you the power to police illegal aliens. We give you the power to police illegal narcotics. You have completely neglected those responsibilities and duties that we gave you and said, well, in order to do them, we still need other powers that we are using anyway and have proven ineffective, which means you just want those powers for other reasons.
Right.
It's not that hard of a logical leap to make. No. This is a top-down, bottom-up strategy, or in this case, it's bottom-up. Top down, where they've let the southern border across and people are saying, do something about it. Well, I don't know. Maybe we'll just collect your emails. That'll help us. And the Congress gave the federal government, the FBI, the ability to do that for the next 2 years.
Right.
And oh, by the way, if you have a problem with that and report it, we might be able to reinterpret the law and say, if you come forward and say, hey, there's a problem, throwing the flag, you're going to jail for that.
Yeah. We're going to come after you because you are anti-American now or whatever they want to come up with. One of those 13 adjudicative guidelines I've mentioned before, but at least if you're a clearance holder in the government, if you're a regular citizen and learn of this and try to blow the whistle, you'll probably just get thrown in a gulag. But here's another aspect of that. Okay. You have the DEA, you have the FBI, you already have plenty of tools at your disposal to combat. Oh, let's not forget our immigration laws. Let's not forget about those. We have those too that we don't enforce. So you have all sorts of things to try to stem the tide of illegal immigration at the southern border, which includes stemming the tide of illegal narcotics, human trafficking, which I'll just call it what it is, slavery, sex slavery across our border. You have the tools already at your disposal. And you have people in law enforcement who want to do that work. Because they do actually realize how vastly important it is to our nation, to their children, to their families, to their communities. And so some of those people, and you know what, Steve, I'll actually throw you in this boat because of the work you did in the FBI on a reservation, then volunteering to do VCAC. Those people who do these type of cases, and I'm going to put drug cartel cases and stuff like that in there too, you get hard charging type of law enforcement officers who want to get results. That is their goal, and to stop this type of crime. Now, when somebody crosses the border and they're in America, you don't even need FISA. You can use regular criminal tools that are at your disposal. And like we've talked about before too, you can use a Title III wiretap eventually, you know, if you have a case on this person instead of like a FISA wiretap, which in a lot of ways, going the criminal route, there's a lot less red tape to get through and headaches to jump over to even get your warrant for that wiretap. But even before you get to that wiretap, if you get a lead, if you're working a cartel and there are new players in town, you're gathering data already. You're getting phone records already. You're getting trap and trace records from the phone companies. And even with burner phones, like there are methods at law enforcement's disposal where they can gain intelligence through regular criminal procedure, like, you know, law enforcement processes. And also, if then you are tracking back to somebody who's in Mexico or somewhere, FISA isn't, you don't even need it. Then you can contact your liaison at the Mexico City LEGAT or wherever they are, or even better, NSA or CIA, because guess what, people? They don't need a warrant in a different country. That's not how America does things. We don't go with the CIA to Mexico and say, hey, what are your laws? We're here to follow them. That's not how it works. drives me crazy because people act, even politicians, they act, well, we need FISA because that's the legal method to do it. No, it's not. You don't need it.
What it boils down to, I think, is the same thing we've always been talking about. It's cowardice. They are afraid of being labeled as, well, you're defunding the police because you're taking away this one tool from them. You mean the one tool that's not actually intended for policing, but because it's under the umbrella of, well, the FBI has it and the FBI equals police, even though the FBI isn't police, with the exception of the uniformed police that work for the FBI. They are an intelligence agency. They tell you that on page one of their rule book, which says the Domestic Investigation and Operations Guide. What is our prime directive? Number one, collect intelligence. Number two, investigate violations of federal law. I mean, they spell it out. What is the most important thing to them? Collect intelligence. They are not the tip of the spear when it comes to law enforcement, contrary to what we are led to believe by popular culture. When you watch TV and movies, it's always the FBI like kicking down the door. No, most FBI agents never actually leave their desk. Unless you got something, I don't want to belabor this because I have another one that I feel like is going to really fire you up, Garrett, and I will hand over the reins because this was actually the hook that I had for wanting to talk about this. And then the 702 thing just fell into my head this morning and I'm like, this other story was in Catholic Vote reporting on it. And it was, I'll pull up the Biden administration to impose new pro-abortion rule on employers. That sounds a little bit nefarious, and especially from a allegedly Catholic president. And this is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. They're issuing a final rule and interpretive guidance to implement the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, which I'll pull up in a moment. And that requires a covered entity to provide reasonable accommodations to a qualified employee or applicant, known limitations related to, affected by, or arising out of pregnancy, childbirth, or related medical conditions. Ooh, that last catch-all might be a problem for us here. And if you read through this article on Catholic Vote, the rule is basically going to say that going to get an abortion is a reasonable accommodation that the employers have to support across the board. It's not, no carve-outs for any religious organizations or anything like that. And I said that I had the actual language of the law, the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, which I pulled up. And if you go through here, and this was caution at the time, this actual bill was proposed like 13 years ago. And it's just been waiting and waiting in the winds until they had, I don't know, enough support for it or enough ignorant people in Congress to say, well, what? That title sounds good to me. I'll just vote along with it. And the bullet points here for those listening and not watching along, even those watching this kind of small font, specifically, the bill declares that it is unlawful employment practice to fail to make reasonable accommodation. You have to be reasonable, right? You can't say, well, I'm a pregnant woman, so you have to just give me paid time off for the next 9 months while gestation period goes on. No, and I don't have to do that. Well, but if you have a baby and you need a private space to nurse or to pump, that's reasonable. We can do that. And those are the sorts of things that I think most people, their minds go to, because women are in the workplace and women are the only ones that can have babies. Shocker. The American Radicals audience, I don't think I have to hammer that point home too hard. But now, because we have a far left communist government, they're going to say that abortion is a reasonable accommodation that, I don't know, like a religious organization, like a church, has to be and support. They can't take any adverse action. They can't say, no, we're not down for that. This is reinterpreting the law. It was not intended for that, or was it? When you look, especially when you look at that last catch-all, related medical conditions.
Yeah, Steve, you have a way about getting me a little bit fired up in the morning. First, I think I was already there, and I'm basically just inwardly praying to keep myself calm because
it's the new time slot.
It's the morning. I'm ready to go. I've had some water. I've peed. I'm ready for the day. All right, But you mentioned it 13 years ago. This is one of these. This is what we're talking about the other day. The cowardice, the complacency, the what were the other words you had? Your alliteration going?
Consignment, cowardice,
and
comfort.
Yeah. These politicians, I think you're right. It was waiting in the wings because the political appetite wasn't quite there, but the Marxists in government were. They were already there. They're the ones who wrote this bill. And now 13 years later, and this is where, this is why, where the cowardice comes into play. We've ceded the territory, and now it's, well, we have to. We have to, otherwise we're not going to win another election. Okay, fine. Then we don't. And things get worse and worse and worse and worse until people are no longer cowards and they say, I'm standing up for what is right. I'm standing up for what is true. Elections be damned. Because look at these pathetic politicians. And not, okay, now the quote-unquote conservative side. Well, I have to, because if I don't vote this way, then I'm going to lose. Well, then you lose. Because at the end of days, you are going to be held to atonement for everything you've done. Me too, okay? Myself included. But when you purposefully go into something like this, knowing it's wrong, and saying, well, I'll vote for it anyways, you're a coward. And I had something else for today, but I'm going here now, because how can I not? Psalm 139, starting in verse 13. For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. If I would count them, they are more than the sand. I awake and I am still with you. Tell me again. Sorry. Tell me again it's not murder. Tell me again they aren't human beings, okay? And tell me again, oh, I'm going to lean into my cowardice because I have to win a freaking election.
If the solution, do you think if you're going to make a political decision and say, we need to win an election to save our future, then you should set an example and throw your own kids into the volcano first.
Yeah.
Or yourself.
Right.
I mean, there's no end to the, you know, you're just like in your, 33rd trimester at that point, right? Just throw yourself in.
Yep. You go. Prove that you're right that way. You know, even from a logical perspective, the argument doesn't stand up, but we just seed it. We just give it over. Drives me crazy, man. You were right. You're right.
All right. So we'll move off of this topic because I think we could probably just stay on this all day. But there's a couple more examples. I definitely want to get to this one though, because this has been relevant in the news, and this deals with the student loan forgiveness that has been proposed yet again, as it's been struck down, and they keep using rules and different mechanisms to try to do it because it's not legal. If you borrow the money, you should pay it back. And this was the story from, I think, NBC or CNBC. Biden administration releases formal proposal for new student loan forgiveness plan. All right, Barrett. So, you know, up to this point, if this goes through, the loan cancellation, the total amount so far is $153 billion. Well, I mean, we can just send that over to Ukraine, right?
Yeah. This will be good for our children, Steve. More debt.
The outstanding federal education debt in the United States is around $1.6 trillion. You want to talk about, you know, destroying your future. You know, it's one thing to end it, snuff it out before it actually is born, but it's another thing to burden it because you say that you have to get an underwater basket weaving degree. And if you don't, your future is going to be ruined, and make sure you take out a $200,000 loan to do that, or your dreams will be crushed. Well, we've done that to people. There's no question about it. But the mechanism that they're using to do it, first, the Biden administration tried to do it via executive order, and the Supreme Court rejected that, the first attempt. And then now they're going to use a different program to do it. And the people who are going to benefit from this, wouldn't you know it, because, you know, I know you had some student loans and, you know, worked really hard and did jobs that probably required calluses on your hands and a lot of physical toll to your body in order to do it. But if I pull up this other from the at AMU's Twitter profile, Biden's student loan cancellations to cost taxpayers $559 billion. $300,000 income households are the biggest beneficiaries of it.
Mm. Tax the wealthy, though, I thought, Joe. We did it, Joe. Yay. Dude. Oh, man. The hits just keep coming. Like, one, okay, I guess it depends, too, where you live, but $300,000, like if you're living in California, like LA, 300K probably isn't that much, but in I don't know, West Des Moines, Iowa, like you're living large. And why are, okay, well, one, the government shouldn't be canceling anybody's student debt. I will say this, the FAFSA program and the intricate involvement of government with college, that does need to like be cast into the fire as well, or drastically changed. Cause like I finished out my undergrad at Marquette University. It's a private college. I wouldn't have been able to go there if it wasn't for the GI Bill, but I want to say kids are paying like over like 100K a year. Well, this is back in, you know, 2014, 2013 when I was there. And I think even more if they were like living in a dorm. And it's like, maybe you shouldn't have done that. And I don't know what it is for the cost of inflation, but back in like the 70s, it was like 12 grand a year, like total. And I think even adjusted for inflation, like that's a relatively reasonable fee to go to school for a year at like a, you know, a private institution. So, you know, like a University of Wisconsin at Milwaukee was probably like, you know, 4 grand a year back then. And even that is out of control. And a lot of that is because these institutions say, oh, well, the government's going to foot the bill and we're just going to pass it on to the student. And now fast forward a few decades, and now the government's saying, well, no, we'll actually pay the whole bill for everybody who has student debt. But it's not the government paying it. It's taxpayers paying it.
And apparently, the people that are formulating these ideas to cancel student loans didn't take economics when they went to college. Or maybe they did, because, you know, in economics classes, they're probably teaching you about like LGBTQAI plus tilde asterisk sign underscore hashtag theology. Because if you guarantee loans, then the prices are going to go up. I don't have an economics degree, unlike Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, but I do have a functioning prefrontal cortex. And I know if you guarantee the price, you guarantee the payment, they're going to keep raising the price. And then it just becomes a bidding war for how many bodies can we get in the door, because we need their tuition. So we'll just make the university look like a country club with all this other accoutrements that are not pertaining to the actual fundamental education. And the people who have benefited from it are, I guess they did get their ROI, their return on investment, right? They're going to wind up having gotten a free education that winds up paying them well into the six figures. And that's been going to be fronted, that payment's going to come out of the pockets of people that paid off their student loans, that were suckers or maybe didn't even go to college. So this is a transfer of wealth from the poor to the wealthy for the most part. And that's the voter base. But, you know, it sells really well. People like free things. And he just got to say, cancel your student loans. I mean, in what other time could we just have a government come in and reinterpret the law the way that they're doing it and say, yeah, well, I know you owe, John owes Sam money, but you know, we're just going to say that's gone. We'll just have the taxpayer pay Sam. No sweat. And because the taxpayer can't pay it, because the taxpayer funded government is completely broke, we'll just print the money and give it to them. And then the taxpayer will suffer that consequence anyway, because when you go to the grocery store, you're going to have to buy, you know, a box of Cheerios for, I don't know, $7.50 when it used to be $2.50 3 years ago. One more that I have, I had actually a lot of them, but I do want to bring up one more. And this was a historical example, and that I just, you know, it's just like drinking through a fire hydrant. So much of this stuff's coming out all the time. Some of these examples like flooded into my mind. And then this one was about the moratorium on evictions that happened after coronavirus. And I thought it was a really good example of, you know, using the law improperly.
This is a really good SCOTUS opinion. If you head over to Justia and look this opinion up, it's a good one.
Yeah. Supreme Court strikes down the CDC's second eviction moratorium. Well, we passed the CARES Act, which was a mistake, and flooded the economy with trillions of dollars, told everybody, stay home, stay safe. We're going to push pause on the economy, kind of like pushing pause on puberty. You know, that totally can happen, apparently, now. The laws of science and economics don't apply in 2024. But the CARES Act was passed and said, you can't evict anyone. So essentially, you don't own your own property anymore. But don't worry, we're going to print a whole bunch of money to make the property of the landowners whole for their rent that they're out. And then when that expired, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, just went out and said, yeah, that continues. I don't know how you square that circle when one agency is supposed to be looking at infectious disease, but then says that renters don't have to pay up when the rent is due. They did it, and then it expired, and they did it again. And then Supreme Court had to uphold this district ruling that said that it was improper and illegal. Government agencies and leaders encourage the landlords to use this emergency rental assistance, but the funds were gone and dry at that point. And you can't just let people live somewhere for free on someone else's property. We have, I think, this document that says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And pursuit of happiness was a synonym for property ownership. Right, Garrett?
Well, you would think, but here it is again, Steve. It kind of seems like a running theme for today, but probably just a running theme in general. It's government reinterpreting law. And by the time it gets rectified, if it ever even gets rectified, the damage is done. Because, okay, yeah, Supreme Court ruled appropriately, but the damage is done to these people who, you know, had rental properties and not getting their rent every month because the money's gone. And it also goes back to what we've been saying. It seems like it's been a theme lately too, is you're funding your own demise. Like, it's not just with, you know, government funding, you know, these quote unquote studies or whatever that are forward facing. It's George Soros and Bill Gates backed, but behind the scenes, the government's funding it. And, you know, there's some other examples we've talked about recently too, where you literally are funding your own government to come after you. Well, you're also funding your own government to make you destitute. And so, yes, so the Reader's Digest, you're funding your own demise. And it's like, it's stunning to see, because, like, I love America. I mean, I know you do too, or at least the idea that was America, or the idea that we thought America was when we were growing up. Like, this stuff was probably a lot more behind the scenes back then, but this just didn't happen overnight. This didn't just happen when COVID-19 came out of that lab in Wuhan. Yeah, I said it. And
you're on Rumble. It's fine.
Yeah. And well, hey, Christopher Wray said it to who's that bloke from Fox that he interviewed with a couple years ago?
Brett Baer. He told Brett Baer that. And you know, that was part of the intelligence community's assessment that the FBI was, because the FBI doesn't do law enforcement. They do an intelligence collection. All right, we actually do have time for one more, because this is actually a video clip. I will give the voice a rest here, but this is actually another issue that I know we both feel very passionate about, and it pertained to a certain vaccine mandate that went out, where the President of the United States used the Department of Labor, an agency called OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or agency, whatever it is, OSHA, to enforce a mandate on 80 million Americans. We'll give this a play, and then we want to definitely leave you with a palate cleanse and also say a couple of thank yous along the way. But let's give this one a play, get you fired up, and then we will close it out.
With COVID cases surging and deaths now five times higher than just a month ago, President Biden is requiring tens of millions more Americans to get vaccinated.
We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin, and your refusal has cost all of us. This is not about freedom or personal choice. It's about protecting yourself and those around you.
The president is ordering nearly all federal workers and employees of contractors that do business with the federal government get vaccinated within 75 days, eliminating their option to be tested instead of getting shots. Employees who refuse could be punished, even fired.
If you want to work with the federal government and do business with us, get vaccinated.
While initially reluctant to issue mandates, the president's aggressive new plan requires vaccinations for 17 million healthcare workers at hospitals and other sites that receive Medicare or Medicaid funding. President Biden's now pressuring private companies too, directing the Labor Department to require businesses with 100 or more employees ensure their workers are fully vaccinated or provide a negative test each week, a move the White House estimates will impact 80 million Americans. Companies that do not comply could face fines, the White House anticipating lawsuits.
We're going to protect vaccinated workers from unvaccinated coworkers.
Oh, I'm from the government and I'm here to help, right, Gary?
That's right. Dude, this is the one. I'm glad you brought this up, because we can't let this die. You cannot.
There's no amnesty for this.
No. His whole demeanor, the words he's saying, That is tyranny, folks. And I don't care where you stand on vaccines or whatever. You can see behind me all the army crap. I don't know how many vaccines I've been pumped with. But at the end of the day, it's your choice. It is up to you in an alleged free society. The government doesn't get to tell you what you can and can't put in your body. But they're going to threaten you. They're going to threaten your job. And then remember, fast forward a couple years, he wrote signed a new executive order that overturned all of that.
Yeah, rescinded it. So that they didn't take the L at court.
Exactly. That is just as tyrannical as signing the first 14042 and 14043 in the first place, because it's so arbitrary. That is the very definition of tyranny. Just doing whatever you want because I'm in charge.
That 14043 number is burned into my head. Oh, yeah. I this is dark, but it's like it's tattooed on my wrist because I had to type it in an email every single day.
Yep.
And that was the lengths that I went to. I went with extreme compliance. I know other people went with radical refusal. I mean, it's my way, my snarkiness. I just said, I'm going to test every single day. And wouldn't you know, when I was standing in line, I could have been exposed again. I better go retest. I'm probably going to have my nose fall off from cancer.
Yeah.
But dagnabbit, it was worth it for the snark. All right. I do want to end on a nice palate cleanse here, but we want to make sure that we had a couple of Rumble rants and we got a subscriber coming in.
Oh, nice.
Which folks can do. A reminder on the subscriber, you have to do it on computer through the web feature, not through the Rumble app or on your phone. So if you want to subscribe, all that, that's $5 a month. That goes directly to the American Radicals podcast. And like I said, we used the proceeds that we've received thus far that you guys have generously handed our way to update our streaming capacity so that we're not in conflict with we're actually sharing and mooching off of Kyle Serafin. But now we're standalone. We have our legs underneath us. We're like a newborn baby deer, wobbly, but we have all four hooves on the ground. And I think we had a couple of Rumble rants. You want to pull those up, Garrett?
Yeah.
So Ed Allen, good morning, deplorables. Waiting for GOB to really go off. Worth the contribution.
A little bit later, he also said something like, we need a GOB like riled up meter. That wasn't his words. I forget now. It was better than that. More clever. I forget exactly. And then, yeah, here's the other.
And Philip McGroin. I mean, Mount Rushmore levels of account names. Thank you guys for letting us know how bad the weaponization is. I'm sorry that we have to do it, but we're putting on the Thanos gauntlet. That's my favorite reference now, that we're just going to have to do it ourselves. Nobody seems to want to do it. All right. And then lastly, before we get to the palate cleanse, we would be delinquent or I don't know. Remiss. We would be not doing our duty if we didn't make sure to mention that to go to the-suspendables.com. Keep Garrett busy. I mean, we got the new time show for the show for a reason. That clears up the rest of his day to manufacture t-shirts and lapel pins.
Mm-hmm. And I'm all caught up. Everything that was waiting in the queue shipped out yesterday, minus one shirt, because I'm waiting for like an extra small I had to order. So keep them coming, everybody.
All right, the-suspendables.com to support the merch store. And now for the palate cleanse. Been on this dad joke kick a little bit myself, and I found these libertarian dad jokes, which I thought were very good. Reason TV has been solid. They're getting up there with Babylon Bee in my mind of just the content. And these aren't new. They've been around for a while, but when I watch a YouTube video and I laugh out loud alone in a room, I know that it's really struck a chord with me. And I figured that since our mind meld is here complete, that it'll probably strike a chord with Garrett as well and with the audience. So we'll give this one a play. This is libertarian dad jokes.
What did communists use to light their houses before candles? Electricity.
I asked my North Korean friend how things were going there. He said, I can't complain.
Yeah. Why did the libertarian quit his job at the Italian car factory? Because he hated Fiat. Fiat.
How do you know Arlington National Cemetery is popular?
I don't know how.
Because people are dying to get in there. During all the foreign wars, without congressional authorization. They die overseas and then the body is shipped back home.
Yeah, no, I get the mechanics of it.
All right. that video goes on for a couple more minutes, but I figured a nice three or four of those was probably appropriate way to close out on today's show for the American Radicals podcast. Folks, thanks for joining us today. You reminder that we have the Saturday episode. That's at noontime, rumble.com/amradpod. I'm going to try a feature here for those of you on Rumble. This is a new feature called the Rumble Raid, where I can send over my audience to another stream. And for those who are familiar with the Suspendables, the Kyle Serafin show shall be streaming here in the next 10, 15 minutes. So if you stay in the chat, I'm going to try this out. We'll give it the old college try and see if it works, if it's ready for prime time. Rumble's been pumped this one pretty hard to us. But for the rest of you, thank you again for joining us today. We'll be back with you on Saturday, and make sure that you enjoy your day until then.
You've been listening to the voice of the Suspendables on the American Radicals podcast. Follow us on rumble.com/amradpod. Everybody.